to another episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I am Enquirer Executive Editor Burl Love, and with me today, co-hosting back again, is Aaron Glenn. How are you, Aaron?
I'm happy to be here.
Well, first of all, I have to congratulate you. The APME, which is the Associated Press Managing Editors Group, named you as Ohio's rising star reporter. Congratulations.
Thank you. They must have known I would have a lot of stadium reporting to do.
Well, it's a very prestigious honor, and you bring honor to the Enquirer. We know you're a rising star here, but it's nice to have the industry give you that recognition as well. So we are with you today, Aaron, because our special guest on this week's episode is Hamilton County Commission President Denise Driehaus, who has been making the rounds talking about all things stadium lease. Yep. So we're going to talk to her about all of these things, but just bring us up to speed. Bring me, bring our listeners up to speed on where things are.
Yep. So Hamilton County has announced their lease terms for a new lease agreement with the Bengals to renovate Paycor Stadium. This isn't the final lease agreement. This is a letter of intent, basically laying out the outline of the agreement, and then they're still negotiating, and they've set a new deadline. Technically, the deadline is August 1st, but commissioners have said they'd like to get everything approved by July 31st.
So the previous deadline was the end of June.
Right.
Which was the deadline for determining whether or not there would be a new lease or whether they would extend the current lease
right.
for 2 years, which no one really wanted to do. Neither side. Bengals, County.
No, they wanted to get some, I think, renovations started.
Right. So we're going to get into all of that with Denise. And also joining us will be the, let's call him the hired gun, the expert negotiator, David Abrams, who is with Inner Circle Sports. He's also a clinical associate professor at the Tisch Institute for Global Sports at New York University. So he is what was lacking the first time around. The county and the team negotiated a lease. Lots has changed in the 25 years since that happened. There's been other stadium leases that, let's say, put less of an onus on the taxpayer and more on the NFL on the team. So they brought him in. He's going to be joining us today as well. So I don't know, Aaron, should we jump right in?
Let's get into
it. All right, let's bring our special guests. It is special guest time on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. And as promised, we have Hamilton County Commission President Denise Driehaus, along with, for a little bit, because we're going to be talking about the stadium lease, David Abrams with Inner Circle Sports, who's also a clinical associate professor at the Tisch Institute for Global Sport at New York University. That's a hell of a title, David.
Well, yeah, that's academics. They want to give you nice big titles.
All right. So let me just set this up. We have had on the podcast your Denise, your cohort on the commission, Alicia Reese. We've also had Tom Gableman, the former outside counsel for the county who was involved in the lease negotiations. So we've talked about this a lot. There's a lot of interest in this, but this is the first time on the podcast that we have had anyone here talking about what looks to be the final deal. And you are obviously, as the president of the commission, the lead negotiator. Mm-hmm. And you had, as we've reported, the county changed some things up. You brought in David, who is very experienced at you know, these types of funding arrangements, these types of lease agreements. You you changed the council that represented you. So there's just been a lot that has happened. But when you met with us and our editorial board, and as you've said to many others, you've called this not the perfect lease, but there's no such thing, but a way better agreement than what we have had in the county going back to the construction of the stadium. So that was a lot. So that was a big setup too. Now the dust is starting to settle a little bit. We're working on you guys, what you call, you know, papering the agreement. Have you breathed a sigh of relief yet, or is there a lot of work left to be done? And now that the dust is starting to settle, how are you feeling about all of this?
I'm not sure I agree with the characterization that the dust is starting. And David, I know you would weigh in the same way. We have an agreement to the terms of the lease, which is good. It took us quite some time to get here. There are some big issues that we needed to resolve or agree with the Bengals on. And so we have done that. Papering the lease is not just a trivial activity, but rather getting down to the details of how we engage on all of these big issues and sorting out those details. That is something that we can all agree to. So we are still doing that. We've got a deadline, another deadline for the end of the month to get that done. If we need more time, we're hoping to take it. But the goal is to have something by the end of the month that, you know, it is the detailed information related to these larger terms that we've agreed to. And David, I hope I characterize, David is literally sitting at the table as we are papering the lease. And let me back up and say, it's been extremely important to have a national expert on our team. I mean, you know, we didn't have that last time. And so I think having David this time lends us the opportunity to look at what's going on throughout the market, throughout the country, and make sure that we're getting something that relative to what everybody else is getting. And so it was really important. We brought David on quite some time ago, and he's been really important as a member of the group to sit with the Bengals and try to sort this out. So, David, I hope I characterized the nature of the negotiations the way you would.
Absolutely. You know, there's several mountains to climb, and one is getting agreement in principle, that roadmap or letter of intent or summary of terms that we've all discussed. And then the next hill to climb is actually papering it. Like you said, there's a lot of fine detail that needs to go into it. And so I look at the LOI as a roadmap, and the principal project documents, or that lease document, is really the fine detail, all the off ramps and all the exits and the things that you need to, not exits in the terms of exiting the lease, but, you know, the various information that you, that guides everybody over the next decade or more. It's important to get those right.
So rather than the dust settling, it's more of a devil's in the details now.
And I think the dust is still up in the air. It hasn't settled down yet. But yeah, devil's always in the details. And so, but you know, I don't want to discount the huge effort that went into the first step, which is this LOI, because we had a lot to discuss by way of the term, by way of how much you know, the team, the NFL, the county were going to contribute to the financial stack. We talked about rent payments that, you know, were really important to us, about control of the stadium for other events. So there were a lot of big issues here, and we came to what I consider to be a good agreement, but we're not quite finished yet.
So let's, before we get into some of those details, let's remind our listeners, hit the highlights, if you will, of the kind of those top line terms that that highlight. Would you highlight those for us from
okay.
the lease?
I'm happy to do it. So this lease talks about a 10-year term, which will turn out to be 11 years because it will kick in as soon as we have papered the agreement. So we intend to do that within the next month or two. So the old lease will go away. The new lease will kick in. So it's really closer to 11 years. And then we've got another 2-year caveat in here. It's a trigger that if the Bengals hit this trigger, it'll be another 2 years. So David is fairly confident that they will hit the trigger. And so it turns out to be closer to a 13-year lease.
And that trigger would be the value of the team?
David, it's related to their revenues. And if you wouldn't mind talking about the details of that.
Yeah, sure. It actually, the trigger is that the team moves up to a higher stature in terms of overall revenues. It's not value, but it's the league looks at all their teams in quartiles, right? And being a medium market team in Cincinnati, they're in the lower end of the quartile report. So they have to move up to the next quartile, which is not a big lift, actually, from a numerical standpoint. So it's very achievable. And it actually puts both the team and the county and the citizens and fans of the Bengals in the same position. Everybody wants them to be successful. So the more successful they are, the more likely that they'll reach that next quartile, and then they'll automatically trigger an extension.
So they are on the bottom now, correct? Or close to it?
Of the bottom quartile. They're in the bottom quartile, yes. Yeah, I don't know
Forbes listed them as 32nd. So they've got to basically go up 8 spots for this to kick in.
I mean, yeah, Forbes, all of the others, CNN, Sportico, the Sports Business Journal, they all do valuations and rankings. They're all going to be different. I mean, generally speaking, they're probably close, but I don't know that they're 32nd at all. I haven't seen the quartile rankings at the NFL in quite a while. So let's assume that the most they have to go up 8 spots. I believe it's less than that.
Okay.
But the sheer dollar amount in revenues is very, very attainable.
Okay.
All right.
That was number one.
Yeah.
And I should have started with, the goal here is to keep the Bengals here, to get a better deal for the taxpayers and not raise taxes. So those are, I should have started with, that's kind of the premise. Yeah. All right. So
you achieve that.
Yeah. Yes,
no,
we did.
No new taxes.
Yeah. That's right.
Where this is funded by the existing half-cent sales tax.
That's right.
And if this gets papered, I love that term.
I do too. I love the word. Yes, and it's an attorney thing.
It also sounds like a home decorating thing. Yeah. But you have achieved the goal of keeping the team here.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So 10 years.
Okay.
More like 11.
11. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really 11.
One plus 10, as the commissioner said. Yeah.
Because we have we have 1 year left in the current lease.
That's right.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. That's right.
All right.
All right.
Continue.
Clicking through. I do have my list in front of me. So, all right. Then we talk about the financial stack. And we've always talked about a stack that was different from where we started. So in the past, the county has borne the brunt of like 94% of building the stadiums, maintaining the stadiums. So we wanted a more equitable split here. And so we do have a split between the county and the Bengals. The NFL is in, and we hope to get some money from the state, and we can talk about that at a later time if you'd like. But I am optimistic about that. And so the county's in, and we have to live within our means, right? As you said, we only have one funding source for the county, and that's the sales tax that people voted on many years ago, and it still exists. But there are other pressures against the sales tax. It's not only the Bengal Stadium. It's the Red Stadium. It's debt service. It's a pilot payment to the schools. So we've got some other pressures there. So we have done a lot of figuring. We've got another set of experts for this to talk about what our capacity is there in taking into account all these other pressures. And so we came up with the $350 million contribution then from the county. The team's in at 120. 60 of that is from the NFL. But I do want to say the team had to go get that money. I mean, we couldn't have done it. The team had to do it.
Is that a loan?
Yes.
So the Bengals will have to pay that.
They're on the hook for it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that 120 is a team amount. And then they're paying rent. And this is something that I like to lump into a team contribution, because in the recent past, they have not been paying rent. And so to get them to contribute in that way, I think is really significant. And so it escalates. So it starts at $1 million for the first 3 years, and then it goes up to $2 million after that. So I think that's a significant contribution. distribution. If you do the math, it's about 20 million-ish. It'll fluctuate a little bit. So add that to the 120, and we're up to 140 for the team and the NFL contribution. And so that is doing better. And then, as I said, if we get some state money, don't know what that amount would be. I've heard different, you know, thoughts about that. But hopefully 100 million, 200 million, something like that. I don't know.
And currently the best path for that state funding appears to be the unclaimed funds, which
That's
is being challenged in court.
That's right.
But assuming that it survives all of that, that's likely the place where, and not to derail us, but is that process, what would that process look like?
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because I was just asking this question yesterday. I'm like, what
like,
does
is there
that process
look like? Do you have to go, you know, lobby for
and,
it?
And when do we do it? I mean, from my perspective, it's like whenever that money becomes available by way of this process, we need to be sitting at that table, right? And so we have got our the folks that advocate for us at the state level on, they're on high alert, right? It's like, well, as soon as it comes out, let us know. But they're still sorting that out at the state level. They just passed it. It was in the budget.
Right.
And so, but it does provide a pathway for us to get state funding for the stadium. So that's the important thing to note. So, and it's the unclaimed funds.
And let me just ask a question there. So the original projections for the stadium renovations range between 800 million mm-hmm. and 1.2 million if, you know, you include the, you know, the practice facility and new offices and stuff like that. So this is this agreement around what, 470 million, something like mm-hmm. that, is substantially pared down. You said, you know, we have to live within our means. Mm-hmm. If the state were to provide funding, would that then extend the scope of the renovations? Would that be additive,
yes,
or would that replace?
It would
replace?
Be additive. Yes.
Okay.
It would on top of what we already have committed from the county, the team, and the NFL.
Okay.
Yep. So additive. All right. Do you want me to keep going?
Yes, please.
Okay. Down my list. All right. And David, please jump in. Is there anything that I have missed that you would like?
That was excellent.
Well, thank you, David. as a professor, I really am flattered by that. All right. So let's keep going. So important to know that every year the county by way of the lease, mind you, spends money to maintain the stadium. It's our asset. It's a county asset. So we should maintain it, but we're also obligated to maintain it. So we have built into this agreement, $6 million per year of what we call CapEx, capital expenditures, but it's capped. And that's something that we don't have in the current lease. Remember that the team in the current lease, by way of what, and this is where David might be able to expound a little bit, by way of the market, can ask the county to pay for stuff that other teams have gotten in their stadiums that aren't on our radar necessarily, could be millions and millions of dollars, and they've got the ability to ask for that by way of the old lease.
It was like a competitive something clause.
Yes.
That if other teams made improvements, you had to at least have Paycor Stadium be kind of in the middle of the pack.
Yes.
Something like that.
And that's
where maybe David can explain.
And
Cincinnati and Hamilton County aren't alone in that clause. I've seen it in other places, but it is a bit unusual and a bit drastic, because it sort of has an unlimited amount of funding that you might be responsible for. In this case, Hamilton County is responsible for an uncapped amount of capital expenditures over the life of the lease, which makes it hard to predict and makes it hard to budget. So it is very difficult. It's more modern lease looks at a modern stadium standards, if you will, and say the stadium needs to be kept within standards of buildings that were built around the time that this one was built, but also recognizing that it needs to keep up with NFL standards, which is a more realistic exposure. But either way, having an uncapped exposure or unknown is very, very difficult. So what we try to do is move from an uncapped sort of obligation to one that's capped. So this county, the county's capital contributions are $3 million a year for the first 3 years while we're constructing, because we don't need a lot of expenditures during that time. So we're building up a bit of reserves. And then for the back years, from years four on through the end of the lease term, which could be anywhere at year end of 11 or another 10 years, perhaps, $6 million annually. And that grows at the consumer price index. So it provides for a very manageable amount of money, and it's budgeted, and everybody understands what that number is without having to get some sort of due bill that surprises both the administration and their budget folks.
Was that a hard sell for the Bengals? As we go down this list, this one particularly jumps out at me as something they might have fought against. Because who wouldn't want an unlimited budget to do improvements?
Well, Dave, you can answer that, but
I mean, I think that all of these things are, like, when you think about a lease that was done in 1997 and needs to be modernized, there are a lot of points in there that, collectively speaking, there are big changes for everybody. Some are more difficult than others. I don't think this was a particularly hard sell. The team all along has been investing in this building, and more recently have invested more money into it. So they recognize that it's both important to have a number, and also that the county needs certainty. It took a little bit of convincing, but I think they realize this is good for everybody.
And to be fair to the team, they have not come to us in the since I've been on the commission and said, we want, some enhancement for $200 million. They have not done that. And so I think, David, to emphasize your point, while this was something that was clearly to the benefit of the team, there was not a lot of anxiety about limiting the exposure of the county. And that's what we've done here.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
all right. I'm going to let you get through the rest of this.
I
promise not to do follow-up questions so we can talk about some other things.
I'm not even going to mention all of it. Okay. So the one other thing that I think that the community facing piece of this, I think that's really important, is how we use the stadium. And so as I've traveled around to all the 49 jurisdictions, and I do this periodically, I always get asked about this. And why can't we use the stadium for things outside of football games? And so the answer is we should be able to. We didn't have that kind of control in the old lease, but we do now. And so we can bring in high school football games and concerts. So that's related really to the bowl, to the field. But also think about the other spaces where we could have events, we could have graduation parties or wedding receptions or meetings in some of these lounge areas that we'll be renovating to make them more accessible to the public so that we can use our facility, the taxpayers' facility, in a way that benefits the community. And I think of all the provisions, I think this one is really important to the community because it's the one I hear a lot about when I travel around, because people are they're unhappy that we're not using our facility for more than just.
Yeah, you hear eight home games a year.
We hear it all the time.
Right.
And I get it. Right. And so we need to do better. And so the
would
county
that be
then,
a significant revenue source for the county, or do you split that with the Bengals?
This is the papering part.
So, the devil in the detail.
Devil
part.
Detail part, yeah. But the idea here is not only about the revenue generated, but the access for the community to be in their own building, right?
But I mean, I'm trying to make this about the money.
I hear you, but we're not quite there yet.
Okay.
There's another provision here that talks about the urban design review. So we've got with the city, we're doing an urban design review, and the Bengals are at the table, the Reds are at the table, the merchants are at the table with the city and the county, and we're trying to figure out the last four lots. At the banks, lot 24 being the largest of those four, and then the other three are close to the Bengal Stadium. They used to have quite a bit of authority over the density, the height, some of these other things that would limit our ability to do maybe something different than what the Bengals envisioned for those lots. And so we, the county and the Bengals, have said we will rely on this review that's collective to try to determine what's most appropriate in those spots. That's a big deal for us because when we built the music venue, we had to go to the Bengals and get permission to go a little higher than what was allowed. It's like, this, what?
There was some back and forth with the lots and the parking for the Bengals. Yeah. And I think that led to the decision to push the relocation of the gravel company
Hilltop.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. But the Bengals had some say. It seems so weird. It's like we're building a music venue in the city, right? City, county, and the Bengals got to say how high it could be. It's like, what the heck? That makes no sense. So anyway, that is changed in here. And then there's some other things. And there's also a community benefits agreement. That's another one where we will have to hammer out the details of that. But those are the big items that are kind of top line. David, please weigh in if I've missed anything in your opinion.
I would say the best thing that can happen is the commission gave us great objectives to look for, right? We start with this lease that everybody wanted to change. And then I came in and asked commissioners, what would you like to accomplish? And along with administration, we came up with a list of issues, and we've accomplished many of them. So like, as Commissioner Driehaus says, it's not perfect, but we've got a lot of things built into this that achieve change for the good, for the community. And I think that's great. I always having a partner with your elected officials that give us clear direction makes my job so much easier. So, yeah.
So I would like to get into just a little of those details. And I guess my question, even though I'm anticipating it might be tough to answer, are there any of those details that are keeping you up at night that could, you know, stall, you know, lead to missing the deadline, you know, cause concern from other members of the commission, Denise, that, you know, Alicia Reese already abstained her vote, expressed concerns. Are there, of those details, which ones are going to be the most challenging to hammer out?
I want to say that all of these negotiations have been challenging. They've been challenging. You know, the Bengals have a lease that they like, you know, and we don't. And so it has been very difficult to get. I could talk about all of these in terms of the difficulty in these negotiations, honestly, and also to get the Bengals to think about their contribution, their capital contribution to the facility. You know, they did it. But these are not easy conversations to have with the team. Now, to their credit, they are sitting at the table with us. They did go to the state with us when we went and talked to the House, the Senate. We talked to the governor about state funding. They were at our side during. So we have been working in partnership. But that is not to say that this has been an easy negotiation. It has not. And David, I'll let you expound on that a little bit. But we're still in it. And we're still trying to sort through it. But we have achieved something here that I think people were not confident that we could, right? That to get the Bengals, to come to some terms that maybe they don't love. But here, and as David said, we don't love everything either. I mean, this is a negotiation, but I don't know if we can point to one thing or another that was the most difficult, because I can honestly look at all of these and say, yep, that was difficult. Yep, that was difficult. You know, it was all difficult.
And I think that like two things that stand out in my mind, because I'm a finance person, is how much money each party's putting in and landing on the right amount. That took quite a while. Because we, as Commissioner Driehaus said, we have to manage other responsibilities for the banks and for the sales tax. And so there's a lot of competing demands there. So managing what we were going to put in and over what period of time was, I think, difficult. And then making sure that the team was putting in an equitable amount. Of course, we would love them to put in more, and we would like to put in less. I mean, we found a negotiated amount that fits within everybody's budget. And then I'd say term. We'd like them to have signed a longer term. It would have been helpful for them to, you know, maybe be another 15 years rather than 10 or 11 years. So there was a lot of discussion about that. And we landed on 11 years plus some renewals with some triggers. So I think it was a good solution to a difficult problem. Those are two that I thought took us a while to land on, though.
Well, and it's not a coincidence that those are my top two.
Okay.
I mean, I described this.
I was going to ask about the term. But first of all, let's set aside, you know, critics of where we are right now, I would say, are coming from a place where they don't think there should be any public funding for NFL stadiums, that they're billionaires, you know, they don't deserve any tax, you know, either breaks or direct dollars at all. So you're always going to have that group. And there were people saying, okay, the Bengals should have paid more. So let's set that aside for a moment. I think the 10-year term, especially since we had a 25-year lease to start with, raised a few eyebrows. And you said that you went in, you were hoping for a longer term. Did you go in at 20? Where were you starting? And do you think that that this was where the Bengals wanted to end up, because now instead of, you know, where we are right now with talking about renovations, that if we get 10 or 11 years down the road, now we're talking about a brand new facility. Mm-hmm. Is that where you think this 10-year term sets us on a path?
Yeah,
to be?
I think we were hoping to get closer to 15. Okay. And as David said, you know, this it's 10, really it's 11, then you add the two, so we're closer to 13. You know, it's like, oh, okay, so we're closer to the 15. But I will talk just for myself, not for the commission. Mm-hmm. But I was hoping to get close to a 15-year agreement. So what I consider to be a 13-year is close to that, but not everything we wanted. I mean, none of this is everything we wanted. But we got as close to that as we could. I think the Bengals were dead set on 10. And so to get them off that 10, even to go to the 11, you know, and then to the 13 was challenging. It took a lot of back and forth. And as far as the public contribution goes, you know, we have a funding source here in this community that people voted on. And so, you know, I want to honor the spirit of that and say, we have this. It was very clear people didn't want to do any more than what was already voted on and dedicated to this. And I was real clear on that point, and we didn't. I mean, living within in our means. But we have these obligations that we need to fulfill. I think sometimes people say they don't want to spend any money on the Bengals, but they recognize that we have the sales tax that's already in place. I think what they mean is no more than what we've already obligated ourselves to. I think that's, you know, 'cause when I talk to people, I talk to a lot of people that say, well, we want you to drive a hard bargain, but you got to keep the team here. I'm like, yeah, okay.
Right, it is. You know,
we hate the lease, we
right.
love the team.
I want my cake,
right?
And I want to eat it
well,
too.
Well, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, I love the team and hate the lease too. So, All right, well, let's start there and try to keep the team and make the lease better. I mean, you can see how we get to this idea of we've got these objectives and don't raise taxes. Okay, all right, that's what I heard.
We didn't even mention the economic impact study that was commissioned. The Bengals alone, I'm going to try to remember these numbers, generate about $1 billion direct and indirect economic impact, plus the prestige that the region has of being an NFL market.
Yeah. I was just on a panel about this. It was a panel about sports teams and what it means to a region to have these professional sports teams. It's significant. It's about the finances. It's about the economic impact. And then all the trickle downs. Think about the small businesses that sell apparel or sports equipment or whatever. And then you think about kind of the morale of the community, how we view ourselves, how we market Cincinnati. It's all part of that. And so, you know, I think, you know, to lose the team would have been that would have been a real negative for the community. And so we worked really hard to not, you know, have that be part of this conversation, but rather we want to keep the team. How do we manage something here that's fair to the taxpayers, but keeps the team here and something they can agree to?
And you told us, go ahead, David.
I was going to say, I agree with that. It's like sports is is part of the fabric of the community. And you look at what government can do, and government is a part of creating this wholesome environment that is, you know, it's museums, it's schools, it's fire and police protection, it's transportation, it's public safety. Sports is a part of that, whether it's community related sports or it's professional sports. So oftentimes it gets it gets the negativism that you're supporting billionaires. But in fact, it is a way to stimulate the economy and grow the economy. And I think the role of good government is to grow the economy in the market. And so if you look at the expenditure as it relates to the economic impact, I think there's good value for having professional sports in the community. I mean, whether it's NFL or Major League Baseball or soccer, it's not really that relevant. It's just you have to look at it in its totality and what it does for the community. And it's and there are many direct and indirect benefits of having that, as the commissioner said. So I think it's really helpful to look at it in that perspective. But not everybody is a fan of a team. Not everybody goes to the museum. Not everybody uses the universities or sends their children to the public school system. But yet we all support those things. So that's why I think you have to look at it as a much bigger picture.
All right. Well, on that note, we do want to talk about some other things, because there are other things that you,
yes.
the commission,
we're doing other stuff.
Are doing yeah. other stuff, even yeah. though this seems to have taken all the oxygen out of it. Mm-hmm. So, David, we're going to thank you for joining us. We're going to let you go on your merry way, and we're going to continue our conversation.
Thank you, David.
Always a pleasure to be a part of the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you. I do have one follow-up question. Mm-hmm. Since we had Tom Gabelman on the podcast, and he said something we were unable to fact-check in real time, not to put you on the spot, but just to remind our listeners, Tom Gabelman for years, I can't even remember how many years.
Almost 30, I think.
Yeah, since the beginning of the first lease, was the outside counsel that the county engaged to handle banks, negotiations, the stadium. He came in at the tail end of the stadium deal. And he was working on this current effort for a renewed lease. He told us on this podcast that when the deal is done, he will still be the person to thank, because he and his team got it 90% of the way, and you guys just had to finish it. Is that an accurate assessment, or did you really need kind of a reboot in terms of your negotiating team?
Let me just say that Tom Gabelman did plenty of good work on the banks for many years, and I think the community should be grateful for that. We needed to, as you say, reboot and change direction, and that's what we did, always looking out for what is best for this community. And so we felt that that was best. That's what we did, and here we are. So I think the proof is in the pudding. Yeah, we got to lease terms with the new team, and I'm very confident with the group that we've got now, including David and the local folks.
And then just procedurally from this point on, is this attorneys going back and forth with versions of documents, and at certain points you and the other commissioners, the county administrator, Jeff Aluto, look at it, provide guidance? Yes, this is good. No, this is bad. Go mm-hmm. back. Is this in the attorney's hands right now?
It is, including David, though, who is not an attorney. Mm-hmm. But yes, the attorneys are sitting across the table from one another and trying to sort out the details. And then we get brought in with updates as to, you know, okay, this is where we are. This is where we are. We've got an update actually coming from Jeff Aluto on the 17th to provide us what we can say in public related to the negotiations. There will be time for public comment, as there always is on Thursdays. And so we're encouraging people, if they've got something to say related to where we are so far, feel free to either come in to the meeting or join us online, and feel free to comment.
All right. Do you have a feel for how things are going, just as or is this July 17th date the first time you'll get an update?
No, we're always getting updates. Okay. As you say,
so
it does suck the air
sense?
Out of the room, right?
Are things progressing? Are things going
well?
According to plan?
Listen,
or
down? I feel very good about the LOI. I feel like we've done a good job with that, but we've got more work to do.
All right. So you don't know how things are going?
We've got more work to do.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
I tried. All right. So
I think it's a fair statement.
Okay.
That's there are some difficult issues here, but we've tackled.
Do you anticipate at the end of the month you'll be done, or do you think just because there are so many details to work out that was a working deadline?
Well, it's our goal, right? Okay. It's our goal. We all want this to be done sooner than later. Please know that I'm sincere about that. Okay. We want this to be done sooner than later. Again, so we can move on to other things. But yeah, it's a working deadline, but we're hoping to hit it.
All right. Yep. And speaking of other things.
Yes, please.
We want to give you the opportunity to tell the world, yes, at least our listeners, what else is on your desk that people should know about?
I mean, there's really so much. I mean,
give me the top two.
Top two. Yeah. All right. Well, so broadly, and let me talk about my favorites, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
Because there is like the working of the county, right? Our budget cycle is coming up. Jeff Aluto is sorting through a situation where we've got pretty flat sales tax, which is one of our primary revenue sources. Mm-hmm. And yet we've got the work to do of the county. And so it's going to be a difficult budget. And so I'm concerned about that, and wondering what the recommendation will be from him and how that'll all pan out. Because we've got in the budget, we're paying people competitive wages. We've got some economic development money. And let me talk about one of my favorites, which is a community revitalization grant that is available to all 49 jurisdictions in the county. The county is made up of 49 jurisdictions, their cities, their villages, their townships. And by way of partnership, we want to make sure that we can catalyze projects in these areas that are ready to go, but they just need some gap funding. And so we started this. I offered this like 5 years ago. We have invested millions of dollars in these projects throughout the county. And I've provided you with a map, which I know your listeners cannot see.
I'll hold it up so that people can see.
There we go. Very good. Thank you. It's upside down. Okay. That's upside down. But anyway, it's fine. It's significant because there is a lot going on outside of just the city core, but rather in Cheviot and North Bend and Anderson Township and Gulf Manor.
Sexy things that grab headlines. These are like,
they're not,
unless you're living with problematic sewage systems, right?
Or you live in Montgomery and we have helped invest in, you know, redoing the gateway there. Or mm-hmm. you live in Cheviot and you're concerned about the Capitol's building on Harrison Avenue. Or you live in North Bend and they're doing it's sexy in these communities where we're doing the investment, but it never makes the headlines because it's localized. But I think I will tell you, as a county commissioner, I really take this stuff seriously because I'm here to serve all 830,000 people throughout the county, and they deserve our attention too. And so it has been really important to make these investments by way of that grant. We've got some other CDBG, which is federal money that comes through us that we allocate down. And some of the, has, as you alluded to, is investments in infrastructure where, yeah, you go into Norwood and you say, what's really important to you? They're going to talk about sewers. They're going to talk about stormwater. Remember the floods not so long ago where, you know, things got swept away? We've got all these issues related to climate change. We got to pay attention to this stuff. We did another sewer project in Miamitown that allowed for economic development to take place because they were now sewered. I mean, mm-hmm. okay, yeah, who wants to build a business if you don't have access to sewers?
Right,
and residential too. So, you know, we need to do this work and pay attention to what is important to these local communities. And so that's one of the priorities that is ongoing. It's in the budget, and we always are standing strong to make sure that money remains. And we've got small event grants for communities and large event grants to help out with Blink and other things. But this localized stuff, I think, is really important. So that's high on my list.
Okay.
Another favorite of mine is the Commission on Women and Girls. I know, surprise to anyone. I founded this when I was elected, second woman elected to the county commission, and wanted to lift the voices of women and girls. I had heard a lot about that on the campaign trail. And so took that seriously and then formed this commission. It's 20 women, 10 girls, and let them set the priorities about what they want to work on, research, and then offer recommendations to the county commissioners by way of policy change. And so some of that looks like pay equity. And we've got now a pay equity pledge, not only for Hamilton County, but also for all the businesses in Hamilton County. And every year we've got 40 to 50 businesses or nonprofits or governments signing on to the pay equity pledge, which is a big deal because it raises awareness to the issue that women are not still being paid equally for equal work. So we've worked a lot on domestic violence. We've got first responders calling women helping women 24/7 to offer assistance in a domestic violence situation. So that came as a recommendation from the Commission on Women and Girls. And then one of our really big achievements was going to the legislature after we had tried something locally related to period products. The girls, it's so interesting to hear from high school girls. It's so important that we listen to young people. And they said, we've got an issue related to period poverty in this community. And we said, what are you saying? And they said, girls don't have access to period products either at school or at home. And so they're not going to school for a week every month. Right. And I'm like, what? You know, what are you talking? And so you realize, oh, my gosh, this is a huge issue for learning for these kids. So we decided we tackled it locally first, and we've got period products in all of our buildings. But that wasn't enough. And so we went to the legislature and said, hey, you need to be aware of this issue. Long story short, we did finally get an amendment passed in the budget that requires period products in all of the public and private schools in the state of Ohio. And the legislature paid $5 million to jumpstart this, to pay for the dispensers and the first year of products for the school districts. That was a huge deal. And there were women in Columbus and Cleveland working with us, but it all bubbled up from the Commission on Women and Girls. And so this commission has a reach that is far beyond just Hamilton County, but so important, I think. And the crux of it, the important piece of it, is the girls. We have to listen to girls. And so, so it's been a lot of fun to be part of it. Mary Mountie is the lead at the county, and it's just been a joy to watch it be transformed into what it is now. The other thing, I'm going to do three. The other thing is the addiction response.
No, you did the first two.
I know I'm cheating. I know.
No, you're not cheating. Yeah, you did the first two so, like, you know, succinctly that absolutely you can add.
I can do
one.
Three.
Yeah,
thank you. Thank
got
you.
Time.
So the Addiction Response Coalition, which Greg Hartman started, by the way, before I even got to the county commission. But we now have this great group of people that are prevention, treatment, law enforcement, public health, got the hospitals at the table, the faith community, the business community. It's everybody that should be at the table is at the table trying to solve for addiction in this community. And I did work on this when I was in the legislature. We passed some bills there to try to get to this idea that we need to save lives, get people into treatment and long-term recovery. In the end, that's what we're trying to do. And so the measure here is the overdose deaths in Hamilton County. We have a significant reduction in overdose deaths over the last few years. I mean, it's half of what it used to be in our highest year. And we try to attribute that to something. What's making that difference? It is widespread access to Narcan, but it is also a system where we have connected the dots and provided a continuum of care for people that want to go into long-term recovery and reducing the stigma. You hear people talking about addiction in this community in a way that they didn't used to 4 years ago, 5 years ago. So reducing the stigma and providing opportunities for people to get into recovery is what we're all about. And so it's this great coalition, and I'm really, really proud to chair this committee and kind of guide this work.
And since you brought the numbers, I'll read a few of them. In 2017 was the peak in Hamilton County with 570 overdose deaths. In 2024, that number dropped by 300 to 270.
Yeah.
Still a lot,
yeah.
But what a drop. And so we've talked a lot, and we've reported a lot on there are so many efforts, but they had been disjointed. So you touched very briefly on connecting the dots, almost like this wraparound care. Was that, and there were so many people involved in that, but do you think that that was the one thing that had been missing before? And not to be, you know, oversimplify this, but it's one thing to give someone a dose of Narcan so you've saved their life at that moment, but then what happens next.
That's right. It's the one thing that has set us apart and why we're having this kind of success is because we've got a collaborative approach to this. Let me give you, I'm going to give you a quick example. You mentioned somebody, if you encounter somebody and you administer Narcan, you save the life. Where is that person? Are they taking the transport to the hospital? If so, we've got the hospitals at the table and we've got warm bodies there doing a warm handoff to a treatment facility, and we know what's available and what's appropriate. If they don't, and so many don't, they used to more, they don't so much anymore. We've got the quick response team. We've got the information. We've got the data. We know who was overdosed and not taken that transport. We literally go knock on the door of that individual and say, are you ready? You just...
And what agency does that?
It's the quick response team is the county. Okay. Yeah, it's through the county. It's a pretty robust system. We used to have just one in Coleraine, then there was one in Norwood, then it was kind of countywide, but only on a couple days. Now we've got a very robust system where we can go in and target communities. We saw a significant increase in the Black community a number of years ago, so we targeted the Black community. Price Hill's another one. We've got some targeted hotspots there, but... You made me digress, so I'm not going to get back on target.
Yes.
So, all right. So the quick response team goes out. They talk to this individual. Sometimes it can take 18 visits to get somebody to say yes, but we do 18 visits to get them to say yes. And then they go to, then what, right? Then we said to ourselves, where are the facilities that can accept it? So we have an engagement center where they can go. It's like a triage where you go in, it's meant to be temporary, and we do an assessment. Maybe it's outpatient. Maybe it's residential. Maybe it's, who knows? But we evaluate that, and then that person goes to the treatment facility. But then what? We're always at, then what? What happens if they go back to where they started? What happens? And so we said, all right, we need to start thinking about long-term recovery. What does that look like? It's employment and housing and transportation. And so how do we impact that? So we've got a recovery-friendly workplace initiative through public health where we've got employers in this community signing on to this. The Reds are the most recent signatory. The county, of course, is in on this, to say we are trying to encourage employers to say we're recovery friendly. We want to support people in recovery, and we will do that by way of providing support in the business or in the location of the business, but also talk about this in a way that's not stigmatized. Nehemiah is doing this every day, where they've got people and they've got people on site providing the support. A lot of businesses can't do that. And so we are offering more generalized support to these individuals that are employees. So that's one way. And the other piece is housing. So we're investing in recovery housing through some of our ARPA dollars. So you've got to think about this in the continuum, because if you drop one piece, you lose the individual and they're back using again and you haven't solved for anything. And so you really do have to think about this by way of a continuum. And the group that has the HC ARC is the group of experts in all of those areas that can provide that information so that we don't lose somebody.
HC.
Hamilton County Addiction Response Coalition.
HC ARC.
HC ARC.
All right.
I know. And I've got a long list, but we'll have to do it another time. I know, right?
We'll have to have you back. Thank you for your time.
Sure thing.
Thank you for getting David on the hook. I'm sure that there was some billable hours to the county.
He loved doing it, as you could tell.
Yeah. The Inquirer is going to get some hate mail for spending tax dollars here. But no, all kidding aside, that was super helpful. And we appreciate your time. And like I said, we'd love to have you back.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Denise.
Yeah. Anytime.
All right. Well, Aaron, I'm feeling a little guilty.
Why is that?
Well, the bulk of our coverage, you know, out of necessity has been lately all things lease. Like I said, it sucked the oxygen out of the room. But there are a lot of other things that the commissioners, Denise in particular, have been up to. Did you get a bunch of story ideas?
Yeah, no, I know what I should be focusing on after we get this deadline passed.
Right. But no, there's a lot of good work that they do. And not the least of which, if you go back to, you know, the challenges facing the county, the region, over the past 10 years or so, has been related to opioid addiction and, you know, the things that have happened in the last 5 years in particular, I think, often get overlooked. So I'm glad we were able to talk to Denise about that. So, all right. Well, to wrap things up, I always like to, you know, live up to the name of this podcast and talk about things that are oh so Cincinnati. So we had an oh so Cincinnati moment this week.
We did.
We went to a Reds game and we brought the interns. It's a tradition. We're recording this on Wednesday morning, coming off of a brutal 12-2 defeat at the hands of the Marlins. I told the interns this would be the last time we take the interns to a Reds game because they're just like bad luck. Yes. I was kidding. I was kidding. Did you have fun at the game?
Oh my gosh, it was a blast. And it was 3-2-1 night, so we had a lot of hot dogs. And
I'm glad great. You mentioned that because I think that's an oh so Cincinnati moment that we need to linger on a little bit. You know, there are a lot of great deals to be had, but none better, I feel, especially if you compare the price of a beer at any sporting venue.
Right.
I mean, $10, $12, especially if you're getting like a craft beer or something like that.
Yeah, this felt like more like baseball
it
games.
Did. It did. You know, reminded me, like, I love the Reds because, well, first of all, I grew up a Cincinnati Reds fan. Spoiled, you know, attending Major League Baseball games as a kid. When I left the market for a while, being the baseball fan that I am, I got the minor league experience, right? I loved watching minor league baseball in Reno, the Reno Aces. I actually, when I worked in Iowa for a little bit, drove to Clinton, Iowa to watch a game of the Clinton Lumber Kings, which were at the time like a single A affiliate of the Reds. But the great thing about minor league baseball is you have like these very fan friendly things going on, and the Reds have brought some of that back. So 3-2-1 night, 3-2-1 Tuesday. Can you explain that for our listeners?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's $3 beer, $2 hot dogs, and $1 ice cream.
Yes, is that what right? a deal. Yes, so $3. Now, it's not any beer. You know, right. you're limited to, like, I think Bud Light and Busch Light, you know.
But, yeah, that's...
But, I mean, for $3?
Yeah,
$3 beer and a $2 hot dog. You can't. I mean, you can't get better than that.
I loved it. I haven't been to a Reds game since moving back from Columbus. So it felt like a real homecoming.
No way. I've been to several. All right. Well, let's hope, you know, the Reds turn around this alarming little losing streak here. Let's hope that we're not selling off players at the trade deadline. What do you say? All right. Well, I want to thank everybody for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
Finally, if you value local journalism and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com, click on the subscribe button to see a special offer just for you.
Thanks again. See you next week.